What are we starting with this week?
A Patreon, whatever.
A YouTube
comment. Whatever we do for Patreons.
No, we're saying thanks to our patrons.
Thanks to our patrons. I'm so good at it. Was.
Bringing us this show, isn't it lovely? But we don't want to just thank our patrons this week. We also want to thank everyone who's in our Discord, who right now is mostly patrons, to be perfectly fair. But anyone can join our Discord, can't they?
Hell yeah, they can.
Ooh. And where can they find the link to this Discord?
Probably in the description, I'd imagine.
Oh boy, yes, they can.
Yeah.
Is that the Discord noise? Fantastic. So in the Discord, there's lots of cool stuff. We've got a bunch of cool chats, you know. You can introduce yourself to everyone. You can chat about films and games and Sci Guys and really anything else. We flit about the Discord every now and then, don't we?
Yes.
Every once in a blue moon.
So if you want to talk to us, you could go to the Discord. You might talk to us. Who knows? Who knows? But what you definitely will do is find an awesome community there. An awesome Sci Guys community. Check out the Discord. But before you check out the Discord, you probably want to listen to this episode. And before you listen to this episode, I want to ask you all a question. So if you're watching on YouTube, get down and answer it in the comments. The question is, when's your birthday? Mine was recently.
Yours was recently, wasn't it, birthday boy?
Yeah. Couldn't find a question related to the episode, so I thought, why not ask that? But what's really cool is I could say thank you to my good friend Ethan for getting this lovely top.
For
this
the listeners.
This lovely Sci Guys top. For the listeners, go to YouTube.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Yeah, what are you doing? Go to YouTube.
Go on.
Leave a comment. Tell us where you came from. Shall we start the show?
Yeah. Let's start the show.
Hello and welcome to the Sci Guys,
Hello.
The show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Jamp.
And the rude interrupter.
Hello.
No, you're not here anymore.
Uh-oh. No.
You're out.
I was just happy to be greeted.
Keep quiet.
Okay.
How you doing, Jamp?
I'm splendid. How are you?
I'm great.
Guys,
my voice is going, as you can tell.
Oh, that's such a shame.
I know.
Well, if your voice goes, it'll be just me and no one else in this room.
Can I join in?
No, Luke, not quite yet.
Sorry. Did you hear
this
that?
Week, we're talking about trees and fungi.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Who's a fungi?
Me?
You're co-host Luke Catford.
Yay!
Hello.
Hey!
You feel good?
Yeah.
Good. So trees and fungus is what we're talking about today. Do you guys know about this? Do you know what we're talking about?
I know of them, yeah. Yeah, trees and, I see them most days. When I go outside and touch grass, I see some trees as well.
It's you touch nice. Grass, really?
Occasionally.
I didn't take you for the grass touching type.
No, I'm quite allergic.
No, so do you know what the connection between trees and fungi might be?
Is it that they cohabit in forests?
Yeah, they raise little
Is
kids
it that
together.
they communicate with each other through their root systems?
Cool. That's basically it. So we're talking about mycorrhizal networks today. Do you know what those Jamp?
Myco is to do with mycelium, surely, which is to do with fungi. And what was the other part of the word? I forgot.
Rhizal.
That's to do with roots. It's just a guess.
Basically, yeah.
So cool. Wow. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, so myco comes from the Greek for mushroom. I think it's mycos or myco, something like that. So it just means fungus, basically.
Fungus roots.
Yeah, so it's like mycoprotein. It's fungus protein, right? And rhizal, you'll see it in sort of rhizomal, not like the rhizome of your cells, but as in things like sort of grass, things that run roots under the ground and shoot up again. Although, is that grass? I feel like it is. I'm running off of high school biology here. So if I am wrong, I'm very sorry. But look it up. You'll find it out. Yeah?
Yeah.
We love accuracy here.
Oh, yes.
Oh, boy. So what are fungi? What is a fungus?
What a good question. It's different to being a plant. I can tell you that much.
Yeah. In what ways?
Well, you're asking questions that have been pondered by philosophers throughout the centuries.
Shut up.
I'm asking questions that I've got an answer to sitting on this
makes
page.
What makes one a fungus? Let's think about it.
Corey, what's a fungus?
So a fungus is an organism from the kingdom fungi, but it also can be more colloquially used to describe sort of slime mold, which aren't exactly funguses. So you will know what a fungus is. You know, mushrooms, they're fungi, yeasts, mildews, most molds, those are all not mushrooms, those are all funguses.
Yes.
Yeah. And as I said, there's other kind of fungus-like organisms, like slime molds, and there's also water molds. Like I said, they might be called fungi, but they're not technically fungi. Yeah?
Yes, probably we're going to get into this, but is there, when I ask, like, what are fungi or what is a fungus, is there a specific way in which the, like, versus a plant, like, a different way to metabolize, different, mm-hmm. like, inputs, outputs, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so it's interesting. A lot of...
cells, maybe?
Well, yeah, kind of all of those different things, yeah. really. So you might have heard this, that fungi are probably closer to animals than they are to plants. And for a long time, fungi were kind of classified under, like, plants. They were, like, a type of plant.
Right. Well, that's wrong.
Well, yes. A lot of people still think that, though. Okay, for example, okay, well, have you ever said that, have either of you ever said that you have a plant-based diet?
Right.
No,
I would have just said I'm vegan.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's so much shorter.
This is something that really bothers me. Like, I realized it a couple months ago because I didn't really think about it. Then I realized a lot of people think that mushrooms are plants. They're not. It's a fungus. Like, every mushroom is a fungus. But whenever someone says plant-based and it's got mushrooms in it, I'm like, that's a lie.
Mm. Yeah, you should sue them. Fungus, you can make loads of money.
This is almost as bad as Nando saying their food is plant-based, but it doesn't follow a plant-based... follows a plant-based recipe, but isn't vegan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's mostly plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly plant.
What? No. Yeah. No. A fungus is not... No. So a fungus isn't
a
plant.
Nando's. Or are they... Or are they fungus?
Oh, the Nando's thing.
Is it...
No, they pea protein.
Yeah, they couldn't. Yeah. They basically couldn't confirm whether or not the lemons that they used had bug on them.
Amazing.
As in a bug. They were like sort of given a sort of bug wax on the outside to make them all shiny. So that's the Nando's thing.
Incredible.
But back to funguses, or fungi, rather. What makes fungi sort of different from plants? Well, let's just talk about generally what fungi are. So do you know what a eukaryote is?
No.
If Luke doesn't know, I have no hope.
So a eukaryote is basically an organism that's got sort of organelles inside of itself. So like we have, you might know some organelles inside of our cells.
Mitochondria.
Bingo.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So an organelle is this little sort of membrane-bound thing inside of a cell that does a specific job.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like a ribosome, they've got like they've got a nucleus as well. Whereas you've got prokaryotes, which don't necessarily have all that stuff.
Okay.
Don't really have all that stuff. But fungi do have that. They've got, clearly, they've got like a nucleus. They've got organelles inside of there. And the thing is, they don't have chlorophyll. They've got like distinct sort of features that plants don't have. Their cell walls and cell membranes are kind of different. So, you know, they're not classed as plants. And as I said, they're kind of closer, as some people say, to animals than they are to plants.
Yeah.
Is that really why? Well, no.
One of many reasons, probably.
Well, the reasons are this, because they're very different from plants. Like, different enough that you can't really class them as plants.
Right.
Do they photosynthesize?
No.
Okay. Ah. Cool. That's very different.
Oh, so do you guys know how mushrooms...
They eat rotting leaves and stuff, don't they?
So that's one way. Yeah, that's one way that fungi sort of get their energy. There's lots of different ways that they get it, but that is one way. So you know another fungus that is integral to life as we know it right now, I would say. It's been around, we've known about it for a long time. Not that one.
Okay.
Another one that you know what it eats.
Corn. You know what it eats.
Because you eat it and drink it.
What?
Afterwards.
What?
I was going to say blue cheese. That's not right.
It's one fungus that makes
mold,
but a different kind of food and a different kind of drink. The drink makes you have a lot of fun, and the food can make you fat.
The drink. Oh, yeast.
Yeast.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Right. Way too long.
Right. I was worried for a second. So I'll explain what I'm saying. So the drink that's fun is. What does yeast make?
Beer.
Alcohol.
Yeah.
Alcohol.
Well, beers, that, you know, wine. Beer. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And the food is bread.
Mm-hmm.
As Scott Pilgrim said, bread makes you fat.
Bread doesn't make you fat.
No, it's a Scott Pilgrim
reference. Everything makes
you
fat.
It's a Scott Pilgrim reference. Don't.
Yeah, but just saying.
I'm explaining it now.
I actually think that. Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, nothing makes you fat.
Don't go away thinking that.
Well.
Well, everything makes you fat.
No, nothing specifically, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's complicated. We'll do another episode on it. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. The idea is that yeast is a fungus.
Yeah.
Yeast is a fungus that you probably are quite familiar with. You use it in baking. It digests the sort of sugars and breaks them down and creates carbon dioxide. and alcohol. Carbon dioxide is what makes the bread all puffy. And when you're making bread, the alcohol will boil off, basically, because it's so hot in the oven. When you're making sort of beer, beer is fizzy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fizzy because of the carbon dioxide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's alcoholic because of the alcohol. And the yeast is making all that for you. It's breaking down. It's basically, it's breaking down all that, all those sugars and whatnot, and turning them into those sort of outputs.
What a clever little thing.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there are a number of different ways here. The point is that there are a number of different ways for funguses to sort of metabolize, basically a number of different ways for funguses to get their energy, or fungi to get their energy. So yeah, fungi eat a lot of different things. We'll get more into exactly what fungi sort of eats or eat. Yeah, let's just use the word eat. Basically what fungi use for their energy in a little bit, because it kind of ties into the topic of the episode.
Okay.
But yeah, do you know what else fungi might be used for? There's a lot of different things. So we've already covered, I guess, food. But do you know what else fungi are really important for in our world?
Spiritual ceremonies. That is a real genuine thing.
Yeah. It's not on my list.
No, okay. I didn't expect it to be on his list, to be honest.
Would you like to explain?
Well, I think it's quite obvious, is it not? Yeah, people take hallucinogenic mushrooms to connect with God, supposedly, especially in tribal settings and at frat parties.
Much the same thing. Yeah, so there's that.
Yeah.
They're also used in science. So yeast is used a lot in science.
And those same fungi are now used by Imperial College London to try and cure depression.
Which we've done
videos about before, haven't we?
Yeah, well, we spoke about how psychedelics were initially used for mental health research until the scientists started taking, well, this was LSD, until they started taking them home and using them. And... You know, whole war on drugs, they cracked down on that real quick.
Yeah.
And then we really stifled that sort of research for a while.
Well, who is that? What was that guy called? Is it Albert Hoffman? Became like one of the most wanted men in America, and all he was doing was basically making a bunch of LSD and giving it out for free.
Oh, I don't remember.
And there was like this big, like, let's go kill him kind of thing.
Might be in our LSD episode.
And maybe.
If not, then...
The guy that rode the bike, really.
That was
a different guy.
He wasn't in America, I don't think.
What was he called?
I don't know. The episode was called Lucy on a Bike with Diamonds.
Yeah, episode 7. Watch it.
So go and watch that and let us know in the comments. But we also used yeast in science a lot.
I have disseminated fake news.
Oh, goodness.
No way.
Albert Hoffman is the guy who discovered LSD.
Okay.
He's not the guy. Timothy Leary, I think, is the guy who was like the most wanted man in America.
Okay.
Again, very that might be fake news too. Who knows what's fake news these days?
I mean, hopefully we do know.
Well, apparently not, because I just disseminated some. It's not the most insidious fake news, but it is fake news.
Absolutely. But it's fake news that can be combated by listening to our episode on LSD.
Episode 7. Go watch it. You were telling us about yeast.
I was telling you about yeast. So the reason we know a lot about sort of how cells work is through studying yeast. We study yeast a lot. I studied a lot of yeast in uni.
How did you study it?
You just make it grow and look at it.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Stain it, you know.
Stain it.
Yeah, so you can look at it.
Put red wine on it. See what happens.
And then you put the white wine on it to get it out.
Yeah. Make it grow. Yeah. Talk about it growing. Think about building little places for it to grow.
Sing to it.
No. That didn't come into my biochemical engineering. Course. No, it didn't.
Maybe you should have.
Maybe. Look, next time I build a bioreactor, or the first time I build a bioreactor, I'll make sure to put a little speaker in it so that it can sing.
No,
to the...
you have to sing to it. Don't be lazy.
I'm going to have to sing. They need to be a closed bioreactor. I'll sing through the mic.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then I'll record it and they won't know the difference. Silly little yeast.
Yeah, but then they'll become a big yeasty megabot and they'll find out and then they'll have their revenge. And that is the start
Yeasty megabot.
A horrible sci-fi movie.
So fungi are also used in medicine. So what are they used for in medicine, do you think?
Penicillin.
Yeah, and other antibiotics.
Antibiotics.
Yeah, so fungi make basically antibiotics to get rid of bacteria. And we
That's
nick
nice
it.
They're so good at everything, aren't they? Getting people drunk, healing people, all the good stuff. Making bread, like, bread just in general.
Getting people well. Oh, yeah, exactly. Getting people high as well.
Getting people fed.
Yeah, full, funky, and fit.
Wow.
There you go.
guess, you know, if you have it, you will really be a fungi.
Yeah.
I'm going to make that joke a lot of times. But seriously, though, fungi, I mean, fungi are pretty great. You could just live your whole life on fungi.
No. Could you?
No, that was just a...
They're not nutritionally complete.
No, I don't think they are.
Okay, that's more fake news we've just disseminated.
No, I don't mean that literally. I don't mean that literally. I don't mean that literally. What I mean is that, you know, you can, if you want to meet God, you can do that with a fungus. If you want to get well, you could do that with a fungus. If you want to drink alcohol, you could do that with a fungus. You know, if you want to eat, I suppose you can eat a fungus.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
So fungi live either on land or in the water, usually in sort of freshwater environments, or they also live in some sort of marine environments as well. And some can live in like really polluted areas. They're really interesting though, fungi. So they are, you've seen how they grow, right? Oh, you've seen how they, have you seen videos of like sort of fungi growing?
So there's like a mycelial mat, is it called? Like there's like an under the ground stuff that's like almost like clouds that kind of grows out, and then the mushrooms come out of that.
So yeah, so those are like the mushrooms. So those are, that's mushrooms. So those are the sort of fruiting bodies of the kind of like, I guess the closest thing would be the sort of sex organs, but not quite exactly.
Whoa.
Of the fungus.
So when we eat mushrooms, we're eating a bunch of dicks.
Out chicken wow. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Little dicky shrooms.
Dicky shrooms.
Dicky shrooms.
Ooh, bunch of shrooms.
But yeah, no, they can be like sort of they kind of grow in filaments usually, so it's sort of like sort of tubes essentially, and they can grow into really complex structures. They're pretty cool, but some of them obviously don't do that. Some of them like grow as individual cells, like yeast. They sort of bud as individual cells. Fungi are they're fairly diverse. There's a lot of different types of fungi, so we won't get into that hugely. But so. Nutrition for fungi. How do plants, for example, how do they get their carbon and energy?
Through the air. Mm-hmm. They breathe in the carbon and then they photosynthesize and use that to turn carbon dioxide into oxygen, glucose, and water. Something like that? No, probably not. Water is not an output because water is an input.
Wait, what side of this is it? No, so they use carbon dioxide and water and energy from the sunlight to make glucose and
oxygen. Okay, so I got my sides mixed up, but all the ingredients were correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like you're making a cake and you put a bit of cake in your cake mix and you're like, something's not quite right here.
I put my cake in the oven and I get an egg out.
Oh, what? How strange.
Wow.
Just a single egg.
That's what usually happens.
Yeah. Is that vegan now? I guess it is. Great.
So yeah, that's what plants do. They basically get their carbon from carbon dioxide, and their energy they sort of get from sunlight. They photosynthesize. They use their chlorophyll, chloroplasts, to create sort of usable energy from sunlight. But fungi don't do that. So fungi get their carbon similarly to how we get our carbon. You know where we get our carbon from?
From food.
From food, I imagine.
What's in the food?
Carbon.
how would you? So what form would you find the carbon?
Cells. Matter.
What? Okay.
That is true.
Yeah. Carbon-based life forms. If you're not vegan.
Think about what kind of forms? What sort of? Sort of chemicals, do you know, contain carbon? What do the plants
make? Muscles, like proteins.
What do the plants use the carbon dioxide to make?
Glucose.
Yeah. So where do we get our carbon?
Glucose.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Sugars. Yeah. Carbohydrates.
Right.
Yeah.
We got there.
Yeah.
Look at that.
So the idea is that if you think about it this way, with plants and us, it's like kind of a give and take, right? So plants also respire, and respiration is that taking glucose and oxygen and turning it into carbon dioxide, water, and energy,
right?
Which is why we breathe in oxygen and we breathe out carbon dioxide, and we also eat we eat a lot of things, but we need to eat carbohydrates like, you know, starches and sugars to get that carbon and get energy from that. Yeah.
Mm.
So it's kind of like the reactions are kind of the inverse of each other, you know? So photosynthesis is making sort of glucose and oxygen, and respiration is the opposite of that. But what fungi do is kind of more similar to us in order to get our to get their carbon. So they can sort of metabolize a bunch of different kinds of carbohydrates, like glucose, sucrose, fructose. Those are all different kinds of sugar. So the sugar you usually see is probably sucrose. They're fundamentally the same sort of type of molecule. They just have different. Some of them are just like longer kinds of molecules or bigger types of molecules.
Does the word carbohydrate come from the fact that it's where we get our carbon from?
No, it comes. Well, no. Yes, kind of. It comes from carbon, hydrogen, and eight, which means oxygen.
Cool.
Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. So yeah. Carbohydrates are made from carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Carbon, hydrogenate, oxygen.
Wow. Do not work in naming things for science.
This is the carbohydrate oxygen.
I've got a promising career.
Matt, are you, man, you know, honestly.
Carbohydrate oxygenate.
Guys, I feel like really like bloated today. I just had so many carbohydrate oxygenates today.
Once you don't eat too many carbohydrate oxygenates, they go straight to the hips.
Is that what you'd call hips, though? What would you rename hips?
Carbon, hydrogen, oxygenate storage containers.
Yeah.
Very good.
No, they don't need to be renamed.
So that's how fungi get their carbon. It's more similar to us rather than plants who make their own, essentially, or not necessarily make their own, but they get it from the air. Yeah? From carbon dioxide.
Blew my mind when I found out that like over 90% of the biomass of a plant comes from the air. It's just so cool.
Yeah.
Because you'd think like, It's obvious once you know it, but because you have to, like we know so instinctually that you have to plant a plant in soil, you'd think that the plants are taking up the majority of their mass through soil because you can see soil. It's solid and it's turning into a solid thing. But to know that they're most of them is coming from the air is kind of freaky.
And the water that you give them as well.
Yeah.
So this is an interesting way of thinking about this because it feels almost, you're right, it feels almost intuitively like that's wrong. But when you think about it more sort of, I guess, chemically, or more in the case of like, you can't create mass from nothing, right? So when you plant a plant in the soil stays relatively same level.
Yeah.
But what are the things that the plant is sort of consuming?
Yes. It needs more of. Yeah.
Yeah. Water. And you know, you can't see the air, but you can assume that the air is going to be is being used up and refilled sort of by the plant. Mm. The same way that you're breathing, right? So it's interesting. Like it's intuitively, it feels so intuitively not right, but you can kind of work it out based on just what stuff is there at the start and end.
Yeah.
So mushrooms and other fungi don't really do what plants do. They're more similar to what we do. And fungi can also break down like sort of bigger carbohydrates like lignin, which you would find in, do you know where you'd find that?
No.
In wood, generally.
Oh.
Yeah. You can also find, you could break down cellulose and hemicellulose. We can't break down cellulose.
Sure.
Which is generally what fiber is, right?
Mm.
And that's what we still eat it, but basically clears us out kind of. But fungi can can break these down as well. They can get their carbon from that. They also can use proteins to get their carbon and nitrogen. So proteins are made up of a lot of carbon and nitrogen and some other stuff as well. But there's all these sort of, the way that like sort of living things work is they need to get different chemicals to survive. We do that by eating animals and eating plants. Fungi basically, a lot of them decompose other living things after they've sort of died.
Yeah.
And they get their sort of nutrients that they need from that.
Do they decompose them or do they like allow them to decompose? They actively decompose them
well,
themselves.
Well, that's kind of what decomposition is. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So are they releasing chemicals that cause it to decompose?
Yeah. So what they do is they release enzymes. Oh, sorry, this is really cool. They release enzymes onto sort of the surface of whatever they're growing on.
Mm.
Think about, you know what a fungus is, right? When something gets moldy, if you've got food that's going moldy, for example, a fruit, there's like sort of a brown area on it, and there's some mold. So what is happening is this mold, this fungus, is secreting enzymes onto the surface of whatever it's growing on. It's digesting them, and then it's sucking it back up, essentially. right, fruity. Sucking up the nutrients that it needs. So it releases enzymes out into the surface, and then the enzymes digest whatever it is, and then it kind of just sort of sucks in what it needs.
Cool.
Which is really cool. So it's like not like eating. We have a very, like, I think a very crappy way of it. It's crappy. I think we have a very uncultured way of gaining it. We just take stuff, mash it up, and put it in us.
Yeah.
Or put it in our tube, and then we just let it go through the tube until it leaves.
Takes the bits that we need, gets rid of the rest. So.
Fungi are way better. They're just like, gonna just sprinkle my stuff that I need, and then suck up the stuff that I want. Very good. So fungi and bacteria are kind of the main things that cause decomposition.
Really. Yeah.
Like, obviously, you know, you must have seen in nature documentaries, an animal dies, some bugs start, like, you know, eating it and stuff. But the main breakdown comes from those sort of fungi and bacteria, which is why just why your food gets moldy, essentially, because fungi just are like, I'm breaking this down, bro. I'm eating it. Basically, if your sort of orange goes moldy, it's a fungus being like, I got this one first.
And the fungus was there on the skin of the orange all the time.
Yeah.
It just then starts.
In all likelihood, yeah. That's why, so with grapes, you, like, the yeast that you use to make wine grows on grapes already. It's just
so
there.
You just leave a bunch of grapes around.
You can, yeah.
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 They'll turn into wine for you.
Obviously, we've cultivated yeasts that's not really what we do with, like, sort of making modern winemaking. We've cultivated yeasts. We've cultivated sort of wine yeasts and beer yeasts and baking yeast to be very specific and give the exact sort of results that
we want. You do get animals in the wild that eat rotting fruit because it's already alcoholic. And then they get drunk.
Yeah. I think elephants might do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's cool is that with that, the reason that being able to sort of digest alcohol is good, because it can be kind of poisonous, but we can digest it and get energy from it.
Yeah, it's super calorific.
Which is like
super
useful. It's like very useful to be able to, like, oh, this food is rotting, but I can still get, if you think about it that way, sort of evolutionarily, why are we able to consume alcohol? Well, food rots, can still eat food, which is bloody brilliant, to be honest.
Helpful.
Very useful. So, and also you get a little bit, it feels fun and good, right? A little bit,
yeah. I wouldn't say that's evolution's not really maximizing for a feels fun kind of good, but yeah, it's
feels
a nice side
good.
Effect.
Lucky us.
Which will survive? One that feels fun kind of good, or one that's stone cold sober? I think I know.
Probably the one that's stone cold sober, to be honest. If you feel fun kind of good and a rhino's coming towards you and you're like, but I feel fun kind of good,
stumbling,
I feel like I'd feel way more able to take on a rhino if I'd had a couple of beers.
Feel way more able to take on a rhino.
It doesn't mean you would be able to.
Yeah, crucial
but
difference.
I would argue that my ability to take on a rhino is not going to be so heavily impacted by me drinking, because it's already so low.
Yeah,
that ultimately and drinking can.
But you might have the sense to escape if you were sober.
But maybe you'll convince the rhino you can take it, and the rhino will run away and scared because they
intellectual ring.
Yeah, because rhinos are big babies.
Yeah,
the absolute fools of the animal world.
Debunk that rhino.
So there's also parasitic fungi. You might know about that. There's some that could grow on your feet.
Athlete's foot.
There you go. Yep. You can also get fungal nail infections. So
athlete's nails.
No.
Athlete's fingies.
Athlete's fingies. Yeah. And you can also have them grow on plants or other sort of organisms as well. So the fungi are quite diverse in that sense. And that kind of brings us on to, so we've spoken about sort of parasitic fungi. That kind of brings us on to something that's similar to parasitism, but not quite. So mycorrhizae.
Who's that?
Mycorrhizae. It's what the episode's
about. Mycorrhizae.
Michael Risen.
Okay.
Who's that?
Mycorrhizae.
Yeah.
As in the plural of mycorrhiza.
I didn't realize we were listing the new patrons.
Right? As in, stop. As in mycorrhizal systems.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Basically, what this is, it's similar to sort of parasitic fungi, because they are symbiotic, right? They do grow sort of along with these plants, but instead of sort of just solely harming the organism they're growing on, the plants that they're growing on the roots of, they actually have a sort of more commensal relationship, a sort of more beneficial actually relationship to each organism, right? So you know, you can have this you know what lichen is?
Yeah, lichen is like it's two organisms like joined together and having a symbiotic relationship arguably not symbiotic relationship. But I don't know. I can't remember beyond that. It's a bacteria.
Algae and fungi, apparently.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
one's inside the other and one gives protection to the other and one creates some kind of, is it a sugar for it to eat?
That's usually what it is. Yeah. But that's kind of similar. So if we look at mycorrhizal fungi, what they do, it's kind of this mutualistic sort of symbiotic relationship. So the plant and the fungus both get something out of it. And roughly what percentage of like plants do you think use these systems?
99.
Close.
96.
100.
A little bit lower.
94.
A little bit lower.
92. 93.
89. 85.
90.
Yeah! Ah. So 90% of land plants rely on mycorrhizal fungi.
Wow.
For mineral nutrients like phosphorus.
Do we rely on it?
If you eat plants.
I mean, yeah, if we eat plants, technically.
Oh, yeah, 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 of course.
We don't have roots, so.
It's nice to rely on someone.
So, so the fungus gets nutrients that are formed by the plant. This is what's interesting. We'll get to this in a minute. But this is quite complex. I don't think it's necessarily beneficial for us to get into the sort of nitty gritty of the science here, because I don't think that's really necessarily what's the most interesting about this. What's going on here with these sort of these systems is that essentially, whenever it comes to any sort of symbiotic relationship, usually one organism can do something or can offer something to the other one. Let's say sort of more sort of mutualistic symbiotic relationships. One organism can offer something to the other one, and you know they can both offer something to each other. So in this case, it's a case of like the fungi can depend on the plants for the fungi can rely on the plants for some sort of compounds that it needs to survive, some nutrients that it needs, and the plants can then rely on the fungi for other nutrients that they need. And so instead of each organism doing all the work, they're basically splitting the load, right? So during winter, so this is from, I think, Britannica. So during winter, obviously, shorter days, plants get less sunlight, are able to have, they basically have less energy and produce less nutrients that they need. And the fungi are able to get these from the soil. So they're in the roots of the plant in the soil, right? They're growing in this sort of relationship with the roots and the plant in the soil. So the fungi can basically get sugars for the plant and give it to the plant through the roots, can give it nitrogen compounds that they need for, like, you know, sort of, I think, proteins and things like that. Yeah, so that means that sort of during some parts of the year, the fungus is able to really support the plant, and the rest of the time, the plant is able to really support the fungus by being like, okay, here are some compounds that you need that are that you can't really get quite as easily. They're able to sort of work together. And there are also sort of other benefits to this. So there are a ton of mycorrhizal fungi in like the soil of some forests, right? Just like so much, to the point where I think... gosh, I can't see it directly in front of me, but it was something like 1 gram could have, I think, about 100 meters of fungi.
Wow.
Very thin.
Very filaments. Thin.
Very
yeah.
thin
yeah.
filaments. In the same way that you, if you were to take your DNA and lay it end to end, it would be very, very long.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But, so there's a lot of these sort of fungi in the soil. And what that means is that it kind of connects the trees together in these networks. So these sort of fungi are connected to each other. They're also connected to the roots of the trees. But because they're all connected to each other, what that means is that they can send things through each other, like, say, nutrients or signals. And it's really, really interesting, like, how deep this goes, because we're kind of still sort of learning about it, but we're learning so much more about how trees basically communicate with each other to an extent. And it's... You know, we tend to think of trees, I guess, as these big loners, sort of dead. No, but you know what I mean? Like these, like
they're quiet. Yeah, they are a bit.
Big loners, basically dead things that grow very slowly, to the point where we don't even think of a tree growing generally. You know what I mean? Like people probably, we know that trees grow, but for like on a day-to-day basis, it's hard to notice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Even on a month-to-month basis sometimes.
Exactly.
Very slow.
Exactly. They're very slow growers. And we think of trees as sort of growing... In serious competition with each other, right?
Yeah.
So like a tree will try and shoot up the fastest, and it will basically try and take all the sunlight for itself so that it can grow as much as it can. But that's maybe not the case, especially looking into these sort of mycorrhizal networks. And I just want to say, I might have been saying mycorrhizal. It's a very difficult word to get out.
Mycorrhizal.
So this is kind of getting us to the idea of the Wood Wide Web, which is likely the title for this episode.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you know what the Wood Wide Web might refer to?
Well, it's the idea that there's like nature's intranet where plants communicate with each other via these lichen. I assume via whatever symbiotic relationship you were
these
describing.
Fungi, yeah.
The fungi.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'd only ever heard about it within like a mycelial mat. Like you have gigantic mycelial mats that are like the size of several football fields. And there's also a tree that's like the whole forest is one tree or something, isn't there?
So, yeah. So I think that's a similar situation, but kind of not necessarily the exact same one.
Yeah.
So what that is you can have a forest that's made up of essentially one organism.
Yeah.
That's just sort of growing, sort of reproducing asexually. Mm-hmm. Whereas this is a situation of different separate organisms that are connected via their roots through these mycorrhizal networks.
Yeah. So how does that work? Is there like, so for example, one tree is in distress, and when a tree is in distress, certain chemicals are released into the soil, and then the fungi have adapted so that in the presence of that chemical, something else will happen, which causes other trees to know that that tree is in distress, for example.
Yeah, so it's essentially a case of like, yeah, so all the roots are in the soil, right? So the tree can release, yeah, you're right, the tree can release something into the, so it could be into the soil, but into the sort of fungus,
yeah,
that's growing in its roots, essentially, in and on its roots, right? The fungus can pick that up, and because all of these filaments of fungus are all throughout the soil, it basically sort of connects all the trees together.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely.
And so that would mean that other trees might offer up certain nutrients that then get transported around by the fungus.
Yeah, essentially. Wow. Yeah.
And is the fungus in this case, is the fungus one giant organism or is it lots of little organisms?
This is something that I've not necessarily, I wasn't so sure on that. It's, I think based on what I've read that it's probably kind of one organism. That seems to be more how sort of fungi work.
Mm.
But I mean, it absolutely could be a case of there being multiple different organisms in there that have been made by like, you know, like multiple different organisms in there, but all the same species or generally of similar species.
Mm.
I'm not totally sure on it because again, this is like, this can get really, really sort of deep and specific, but to go over this topic today, we don't want to get too specific because it is like, it's a very sort of broad thing.
Mm.
Basically, I don't really know. I would guess probably the same organism, but then I could very easily see there being cases where it's not the same organism. I don't know.
Mm.
Further research is needed,
exactly. So, yeah, so this is the thing. Like, you've got like, tips on the root that are like hairs, essentially, like thin. You've seen roots before, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the kind of like thin, like hairs, like sort of ends of the roots, join to the fungal filaments, right? So they're literally joined, and that's how you sort of transport. That's how you transport things throughout them, and that's how you send sort of messages. Really, apparently, fungi consume about 30% of the sugar that trees photosynthesize from sunlight.
Wow.
Ah.
And how, when you say send messages, is there any suggestion of like what kind of messages get sent and how quickly those are sent across a forest?
So it's like, I don't know how quickly, but it's like the general sort of chemical message. So we already know that plants send chemical messages to each other.
And being attacked.
Yeah, yeah. We get ones like that, but there's also ones of like, oh, this like, okay, so I've read about...
I'm low on this nutrient.
Well, young saplings, essentially, of the same, like basically, do you know how trees can reproduce sort of like sexually? Or trees basically drop nuts or whatever, or
yeah,
seeds,
yeah,
or any of that. And, you know, a new tree will grow from that, right? So if it's say, a tree has dropped an acorn, right, and it's grown into a new tree nearby, that tree will be favored by that sort of mycorrhizal network in comparison to trees of a different species.
But is that not just because that specific mycorrhizal network is compatible with that tree?
Well, no, because if they're connected to you know, if they're connected together. I'm saying this is what I've read. This is like you don't need to try and find another explanation for it. This is
No. I'm not trying to find an explanation for it. I just mean, is that new sapling favored by this specific mycorrhizal network, because this specific mycorrhizal network has evolved to collaborate with this tree species.
So the way that this works is that you've got, say, a hub tree and other trees sort of that are varying in size around that, right? And the hub tree will send more nutrients to a sapling of its own than a sapling of a different sapling, even though it's connected in.
But the sapling, so the hub tree. This is incredible because it suggests a very specific level of communication. When you're saying the hub tree will send
need to be that specific,
but when you're saying the hub tree will send nutrients to that tree, its own sapling, is that's going via the mycorrhizal network? It's not going tree to tree.
Yeah.
So being able to like have a tree send a message that tells in the mycorrhizal network's language which tree to send these nutrients to, and then for that mycorrhizal network to carry out the transfer of those nutrients. That's quite a lot of specific data, no?
Not really, no. Not necessarily.
Is it just about like which route it's removed from?
If you think about it, I think we're overcomplicating things, right? Things, we can simplify a lot of things down. So, you know, when you think of sort of like slime molds or bacteria and how they grow and how they work, right? Or even ants. Okay, ants, this is a great one. Ants have a very, very simple system that results in something very complex. So let's say you've got a bunch of ants that have got different jobs, right? You've got, say, a worker ant, and let's work out three types of ant jobs, right? You've got worker ant, a soldier ant, and a builder ant, right? An ant will basically, and I'm going to simplify this, so it's not going to be a perfect explanation, but let's just use it as an example. An ant will walk past ants, right?
Yeah.
And it basically counts all the different kinds of ants that's walking past. And if it walks past a number of ants and it's like, oh, there have not been enough soldier ants, I will be a soldier ant. And then, even though none of the ants necessarily need to communicate with each other than what kind of ant are you and what kind of ant am I?
Yeah.
You then get a really nice complex system of from this really simple sort of subunit of how many of us are there, I will be whatever there isn't enough of. And then that way you've got this really dynamic system of being able to adapt to having enough ants of each thing, despite the fact that they don't need to send very complex information to and from each other. They just need to know how many ants have I passed.
Yeah, of course. But I don't understand then, maybe this is not a piece of information that is known or that you have there, but how does this hub tree then give the instruction to this mycorrhizal Matt,
put your hand up.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that this is not an exact example. I'm just saying this is a way that it could be simplified for you. So if you put your hand up and out, and close your eyes, right? Now jump. You grab Luke's little finger.
Yeah.
And Luke, I'll grab your thumb.
Yeah.
Now, I'm gonna point at which one of you've got your eyes closed, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna point at me or jump, and whichever one I point at is gonna be thirsty.
Yeah.
Right. And the thirsty person will send a signal to you.
I understand that. Thirsty. Yeah. But then it's tree to tree because you're touching my fingers.
But it's not. Okay.
Yeah.
Pencils are mycorrhizal filaments.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Okay.
This is not now, interesting if you're listening to the podcast. So then go watch it.
They should watch it. I'm going to point out, if you close your eyes, I'm going to point to who's thirsty.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Oh, Corey's thirsty.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. It's super simple. So I'm not saying.
So then it's out of which, for example, it's which root secretes the liquid then.
Well, where? So if you put it this way, like if the mycorrhizal filaments connect roots to roots, right? Yeah. And the roots are just the roots are the system by which the chemicals are sent and by which the chemicals are received. So if it's a case of like, oh, I've got a chemical signal, then I send it through the channel where I got the signal.
Yeah, so that's what I didn't understand then.
Okay.
The mycorrhizal network is connecting a root to a root, or is it just a general mat that's everywhere, or is it specifically forming like lines between roots?
So what it's got here, Oh, by the way, is it a single gram of soil can contain 100 meters of mycorrhizal filaments. So wow. what it says here is that basically the root hairs are connected to the filaments, right? So the root hairs will be connected via filaments. So that's basically the idea there, right? That it's whether it's root to root or a mat. The fact is that the filaments connect the roots, so the signals can be sent where they need to go. If you're thinking, oh, that's too complex, then it's likely simpler than that, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's a lot of different stories I could give you about this, just sort of little anecdotes. But what's really interesting is that apparently, and we're kind of on the forefront of this, we've still not we don't know a huge amount about all of this, but apparently that the trees can send chemical, hormonal, and apparently slow pulsing electrical signals through this sort of network. And also, apparently there can be sounds traveling at, I think, 220 hertz, which obviously we can't hear, which can be picked up by the roots. This is some evidence has been gathered that this could be
pick up on vibrations.
Yeah. Mm. And so, you know, this is the thing where people are saying, oh, trees can smell. And this is the thing where people are saying, oh, trees can smell, trees can hear. But ultimately, when you think about smelling and hearing, it's complex, but it can be heavily simplified in the same way that sight can be heavily simplified. To have sight, the simplest way you could have that is a patch that is more sensitive to light,
mm-hmm.
right? That can tell basically light from dark. That's like the sort of simplest form of sight, just a patch that can say, ah, this is light, ah, this is dark. For smelling, it's just smelling. You got to remember, smelling is our chemical sensing system. So all you need to do is be able to react and respond to chemicals, which kind of trees and plants really should be able to do anyway, right? Because that's how they like send signals to each other in terms of like, I'm being eaten. Like shift all of your sort of carbohydrates to your roots, because otherwise we're going to lose them. That's what happens with grass. When you cut it, that's the smell of cut grass. It's these chemicals that plants release when they're under some kind of stress or whatever. So we already know that
Plants don't want to be eaten. They really don't want to be eaten.
Well, they do and they don't. It depends what part of the plant.
Yeah. Okay.
They want some of their fruits to be eaten.
Yeah.
Definitely.
True. Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Exactly. You know what I mean? And some plants that don't want to be eaten, they do this thing where if a caterpillar, I think, is eating them, they can send out a smell that attracts a parasitic wasp, which lays its eggs in the caterpillar. Supposedly. Yeah.
That's so funny. Good.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Troll.
But this is the thing. Essentially, what we need to understand here is that plants can send signals to each other, and there are more ways of doing it than you might be aware of. These mycorrhizal networks essentially connect different trees to each other and allow them to sort of share energy or share nutrients with each other through these systems, right? And then obviously, and again, we're not super sure of all of this. I mean, I've heard a story, and you can see it in the link in the description below. I've seen a story apparently of a beech tree which looked like a stump. And once you sort of scratched off the surface of that stump, you could see that it was still sort of green with chlorophyll in there, which could only mean that the other trees were shifting nutrients and energy its way, because it was connected through that network, despite the fact that it was basically a stump, which is really interesting, right? That trees work together in sort of, I guess, communities, or they can in that sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
To kind of get back to what I was telling before about trees favoring trees of their kind. So I'll literally just read to you the quote here. So it says, using seedlings, Assay and fellow researchers have shown that related pairs of trees recognize the root tips of their kin among the root tips of unrelated seedlings and seem to favor them with carbon sent through the mycorrhizal networks. We don't know how they do it, says Simard. Maybe by scent, but where are the scent receptors in tree roots? We have no idea. And we know that trees can sort of sense chemicals via their leaves, right? There's the thing about acacia trees, which giraffes eat, pumping tannins into their leaves when they sort of get a chemical of other acacia trees being eaten, right? So giraffes will
and that's not via the root system.
No, this is via the air. So giraffes will actually if they will eat sort of downwind, So
that they can't smell it.
No, so that the trees, so they'll eat downwind of the other trees. So right. They basically are moving against the wind so that the trees can't send the chemical signals to each other. And if there's no wind, apparently a giraffe will travel a little bit away to eat the tree leaves because the gas won't disperse that far. So
interesting.
So basically this is kind of what I want to talk about, right? And I can give you, we can have a discussion. I can give you more of these sort of little facts. But you've kind of got the basic idea of it. And I think what is interesting to me is that this is surprising, I think, but also I guess to me it's not. And I've spoken to you guys about this so often that we think of trees and plants as being less alive than animals or because they seem to be less sentient or conscious. But the way I kind of view it is that it's completely different scales of time. So trees grow incredibly slowly. But if we were able to look at sort of 100 years and speed it up to a few months or weeks, it'd be really interesting to see what's going on with trees in on that sort of time scale, because that's a time scale that trees sort of, like, trees live for ages, right? They can live for a long, long time. So it's interesting that way. And the idea that these sort of organisms communicate with one another when almost every other organism communicates with other organisms in, you know, sort of similar-ish ways, that's quite it's quite interesting that we find this surprising. Do you know what I mean? In that it almost seems obvious when you think about it. Like, they would be the outlier if this wasn't the case. But we find it surprising that it is the case, almost, you know?
Mm.
But yeah, no, I mean, what do you guys think about the sort of consciousness of trees? Like, what's going on there with them? In that they're able to sort of communicate with each other, and they're maybe more complex than we might have initially thought.
There's nothing that requires consciousness in any of the things you've said.
No, absolutely. I don't mean consciousness as in consciousness. I mean as in sort of complexity, I guess, of how trees...
It's a bigger machine.
...live. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose that this is just, like you say, it's the obvious thing that will happen through natural selection. If there are some similar related trees that even have any possibility of communication, that will happen without a doubt. What I find fascinating is, I guess, like the way that we think of natural selection as happening on the individual level, but then thinking about how natural selection can happen in, like,
on a larger scale.
Not on a larger scale, but on, like, symbiotic relationships.
Yeah.
Whereby if these two things happen to collide or happen to meet at some point in their evolutionary journey, and that gives both of them an edge, then they're now going to become a symbiotic relationship, which is, like,
like, they may not have been picked individually, like, natural selection wouldn't have picked them individually, but by chance, they've paired up with something which has made them really strong.
Yeah, it's interesting, though. I think that it's similar to how that theory of sort of chloroplasts and mitochondria being smaller microorganisms that were basically captured or swallowed by a larger cell and then became, like, this sort of symbiotic relationship, right?
Is that for the modern cell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea that basically the mitochondria, the things that give you energy inside your cells, are, like, one of the oldest symbiotic relationships, right? I'm not saying that as fact. That's just a sort of theory that is had. And I find it incredibly interesting. And, you know, the idea that all these organisms are communicating with each other, again, it just makes sense, because if you think about an organism that can't really I guess the way that we tend to think about plants and trees is that they're kind of like just a step above rocks. You know what I mean? They kind of are just there and things happen to them, right?
I think we think that because of how long they've been around.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But what I mean, I guess, is, like, that that we tend not to think of them as sending messages. I feel like a number of people will be surprised to hear that trees can effectively smell through their leaves.
Yeah.
You know, have some kind of chemical sensing system. But it makes sense. Like, ultimately, if a group of organisms aren't able to communicate with each other at all, then, or defend themselves in any way, what's to stop them from just being taken over, right? Mm. So, like, even when a tree is damaged and it releases sap, there are signals being sent for the sap to fill where it is. The thing is that whenever something happens to a plant, signals need to be sent to other plants or to that plant itself to deal with sort of the issue, right? And so I guess the sort of concept of plants being able to communicate, it's already, it should already kind of be there. It's just really interesting that looking into this, a lot of people talk about it as this incredible new thing that is totally surprising, which it is to an extent, but also it feels like something that we should have been looking for before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's also interesting you mentioned we think about plants as like often competing with each other, but there's lots of evidence that certain types of tree, they actually like basically work together to share and utilize efficiently the light from the canopy above.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is really cool. I don't know how they do that, but that's amazing.
Yeah, I think I've read here as well that apparently I think some species of I think plants stopped basically photosynthesizing and were getting their energy from the fungi. And so they basically went back that way, which is like really interesting, I think, that they don't necessarily... So actually, yeah, it's generally, I think, they don't photosynthesize at all. They don't have any chlorophyll. And like it says here, initially scientists thought that they were decomposers, but they have become sort of parasites to the mycorrhizal fungi.
Right. I was going to say, what are they giving back? But they're not. They're stealing everything.
Yeah, so what they do
That's funny, because I definitely would think of trees and plants as the, as the good guys, but some of them, not the good guys.
Well, no. I mean, if you think about pitcher plants or Venus flytraps or any number of plants that get their nitrogen from insects or animals, a plant being carnivorous isn't terribly surprising. So a plant being parasitic, I think, it's interesting, definitely, but I think it kind of broadens our perspective on how we view life, because I think that we tend to view things as very specific categories. Sort of animals do this, plants do that, fungi are this, but ultimately life is diverse, and I think life is less individual groups of things. Like, as we've said, species don't exist. That's going to trigger some people, but species don't exist. Life is just one big thing, right? Yeah. All life depends on all other life, more or less. And the life is a process itself rather than sort of a description of any individual organism, because if you remove any individual organism from basically any others, they're not going to work. Like, think about our microbiome. Effect,
yeah.
You know? We need our sort of microorganisms in us to survive, more or less. And to an extent, it's that similar relationship between plants and fungi. But as I was saying, the plants that sort of parasitize these fungi, you've got like orchids, heathers that don't have chlorophyll, that don't photosynthesize, that use the carbon from the fungi that are in that mycorrhizal network, which is incredibly interesting that they've evolved to basically just use fungi instead of sort of being more similar to what we'd expect from most plants. Yeah, well, that is the sort of story of the Wood Wide Web or mycorrhizal networks.
Yay!
Yeah, what do you think? Good choice by the patrons.
Is that a patron's choice?
Oh yeah, they voted for it. Good choice.
Well done, guys! Fantastic work.
Well, I think all
something that wasn't psychology this week.
I was going to say they didn't pick a mental illness this week.
Oh my god, so nice, so nice,
shaking it up. Look at you!
It's very hard for Cory doing all that research on things that are sad.
Yeah, it must take a toll.
Yeah, I feel nothing.
Mm. Okay, it has taken a toll.
Do an episode on that.
Yeah, do an episode on why do I feel nothing. Oh no, please don't suggest that, because they will.
I'm going to do some research. We'll have a chat.
I might have to cut that
out. Go to some therapy.
Yeah.
Because they will vote for that.
That's fine. If they vote for it, I will veto it. It's fine. I'm not joking. If you vote for it, I will veto it. You'll figure out that this democracy is actually... I'm just letting you think there's a democracy.
It's a facade.
Yeah.
It's a performance.
So I guess the all that left. Gosh darn it, you're not going to let me let that one go. I guess the all that's left now is the quickfire quiz.
Dun, 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 dun. What should I do? Fungi edition, I guess.
The rules for the quickfire quiz are fairly straightforward and fairly simple. They don't change any time we do it at all, but I'll tell you what they are anyway.
In case it's your first time listening.
I will ask one question and one question only between the two of you. The first person to answer with the correct answer after buzzing in, after I finished asking the question, I like changing up the order sometimes, wins. What do they win, Jamp?
Absolutely nothing at all.
Gosh darn. Right. So my question for you is what are your buzzers? Luke, tell me your buzzer.
That's releasing my sap.
Very good. Jamp, what's your buzzer?
It's me spraying my things and then sucking all up the nutrients.
Oh, so you're sucking up Luke's sap.
Oh, I'll suck up Luke's sap.
Oh my God.
I feel like we've got a new Sci Guys show on the cards, but I'll talk to you guys about that one later. Maybe on OnlyFans. So my question for you both is, about what percentage of land plants depend on mycorrhizal networks? Jamp, what is your answer?
90%.
Correct. Well done. It is 90%. Well done. You win that one.
Thank you. And thank you. Thank you.
Before we go, we've got to thank some people. Some new patrons, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Do we not?
Oh, we might. We do. We might do have a few new people who have joined since last month.
If you want to join our Patreon, there are a bunch of cool things you can do. You can get cool roles on our Discord. You can be any color you want on our Discord. You should join our Discord. Link is in the description. You can also get bonus episodes every month. You can also potentially get access to a new show we've got called Sci Guys After Dark, where we just have chats. It's not necessarily about science, but it's a good conversation. What else have you got? You've got access to every episode of Sci Guys Live. You've got other things too, I suppose.
Yeah.
Oh, you get to vote on episode topics.
Oh, yeah, vote. Just like they did today.
And submit episode topics, like they did today.
Yeah, someone submitted it, they voted on it, and now we're doing it.
It's democracy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
As far as you know.
So why don't we start thanking you. Thank you to Finn Robin.
Thank you to Root Chakra. Wow.
Thank you very much to Charlotte Abbey.
Thank you to Bryn Barline.
Thank you to Pine North.
Thank you, Laura Sinclair.
Thank you to Chris Hunt.
Thank you to Carter Riley.
Thank you to T.R. Brady.
Thank you to Victoria Holzman.
Thank you to Jada.
Thank you to Zach Innes.
Thank you to Colleen Chapman.
Thank you to Mark Flores.
Thank you, Landon Harris.
Thank you to Willow Demetriou.
Thank you to Tony Lennart. Lennart? One of the two.
Thank you, Liz Keller.
Thank you, Brooke Bennett.
Thank you to BeaverBear01.
And thanks, Ludovico.
The names were not too atrocious this month.
Atrocious Jamp. What Jamp means to say is the names were much easier for our silly brains
to
pronounce.
I didn't have to look up any pronunciation.
The names were not too atrocious.
Yeah, no.
We want them to keep on being patrons.
Jamp often looks at the list and goes, atrocious names.
Well, I think that's it for this week. But before we go, we would like to thank all of our patrons with a very special thank you to executive producer Ashley Miller and Finn TZ. And also, thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday, and why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys, or you can find a god at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or at SciGuys on TikTok too. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
That's SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
SciGuysPod@gmail.com.
You can follow me at NotCory everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
You can follow me at LukeCutforth everywhere.
Or goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, goodbye.